I'm Algernon Cash, and you're locked in. This show is where we host thoughtful conversations with people across my personal and professional network who possess deep experience, wisdom, and insight about the issues shaping our communities, our economy, and our future. If you value these conversations, then I invite you to support this work. Your donations help us continue bringing together leaders and thinkers who are willing to have honest discussions about our state and our country. Visit lockedin.cash to become a reoccurring supporter. Your contribution helps us continue producing independent conversations that elevate our region. Today, we're discussing a topic that affects the city of Greensboro. Greensboro is changing. North Carolina is changing. The economy is changing. As artificial intelligence reshapes industries, cities compete for new investment, housing costs continue to climb, and social media increasingly drives public discourse. Local leaders are being asked to govern in an environment unlike any before. Mayor Pro Tem Denise Turner-Rolfe returns to Locked In with Algernon Cash for a thoughtful conversation about what it means to lead through a period of transformation. Denise, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Doing well, Algernon. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. How are you? I guess let's start with more of a basic question. You've been on council now for a few months. How's things going so far?
As you do with every organization, we're forming and storming and getting to our norming. It's been really great to get to know the new council members and the returning council members from a different perspective. Everyone is really sort of leaning in and being deliberate about how they are evaluating all of the items in front of us and how we move forward. So it's been a good time thus far, learning a lot about myself personally as well as my council colleagues, really trying to gauge how we take the right steps in order to support the growth and development of our city.
Well, Denise, you've been able to see the city from several different perspectives as a citizen, as city manager, now as a city council member. And when you look at Greensboro today, what feels fundamentally different than it did 5 years ago? I mean, not just in terms of projects or population, but in the expectations people have of government and leadership?
That's a great question. I would say that, you know, something that struck me this weekend as I was looking at some of the activities as I do just to see what people are up to, I'm struck by the level of investment that's starting to happen, both on the large scale and smaller scale. You know, we have some large efforts that are taking a look at, in part, our downtown. There's a hotel that's going up. There's the news and record site that's being evaluated by a private group. But there's also smaller music venues coming online, like we have at the Pearl. There's different shops coming online. So there's a lot of energy. And part of what I think the community is looking at the city council in particular for is getting a sense of where we headed, how is everyone included, and what steps, where can they partner with the city? You know, I think that the dialogue these days is really, where is the city going and how do we partner to get, one plus one equals three instead of just two?
You know, one of the defining conversations this year has been affordability. The council and county commissioners both approved a significant property tax increase. So residents are adjusting to a slightly higher tax burden. At the same time, residents want a safer downtown. They want more parking. They want more entertainment. They want more continued investment within their community. And, for me, Denise, it sort of raises an interesting philosophical question. I mean, can a city truly continue improving without asking residents to pay more? Or are we reaching a point where communities across America have to redefine what they expect from their local government?
Maybe a little bit of both, I would say. With the moratorium that was put in place at the state level regarding property taxes, we did have to raise our rates in order to ensure that we were continuing to meet both the growing needs that we're seeing, but also really address deferred maintenance and deferred activity that had to be funded for in order for us to be positioned in a strong direction going forward. At the same time, I think that with rate increases at the levels that we're seeing now and the increased activity, people are waking up more and starting to say, you know, what is it that we're trying to achieve? Where are these funds going? And are there other ways of offsetting it? And so I think that with those various questions coming up, we are going to start to have different conversations around what are the other revenue sources that are available to us here in Guilford County and Greensboro in order to offset the property tax rates that we are seeing. You know, it's a difference when the tax rate is just a couple of dollars a year versus more than that. So I do think that conversation is changing on both sides of the spectrum, in that we will have a more comprehensive discussion as we go beyond 26, actually.
Now, when you say that we really needed to raise the rates because there was deferred maintenance or there was projects that we needed to tackle, let's pause for a moment. Let's put ourselves in the shoes of a single mom or a hardworking dad just trying to take care of their house. And when they hear we really, really needed it, like we really needed to take care of these projects, oftentimes that may sound a bit abstract to them. They can't quite understand it. So are you able to sort of drill down a little bit further? When you say we really needed these funds and there were some projects that we really needed to complete, what does that really mean to the average Greensboro citizen?
Well, you know, when you look at our property tax increases, in addition to the costs that were related to personnel from a public safety standpoint, those costs are costs that are important for us to keep up with in order to make sure that our pool of public safety providers, police, fire, et cetera, are continuing to choose Greensboro as a place, and we are not in the space again of having to fulfill positions that are going vacant. But it's also infrastructure, roads that may be falling in disrepair, bridges that have meeting their lifespan and expectancy, and we still have to keep up with those costs. So those are some of the fundamentals. We also added separation allowance for our firefighters, which was a real, real important factor that all of council wanted to support, but that's just a small example. We also reopened the Parks and Rec Recreation Center hours. They were closed on weekends when oftentimes those centers are important outlets for some of our young people. And those are just a smattering. But the deferred maintenance and the really big costs that we see is really in those core areas of water and sewer, of road repair and maintenance, bridges at the same time. Those transportation costs tend to be a really high part of our budget, in addition to the cost of personnel. So there is a couple of balances there. I do want to say, Algernon, and one of the things that we also were looking at before, and where part of what I was concerned with the revaluation was how it was distributing across our community. You know, an upside of where we landed is in terms of some of the home values, some of the homes that had lower values would have been likely hit with higher bills at the end of the day with the moratorium calculations as they were coming in from what we were seeing by having, the revaluation calculations. I think I said that incorrectly before, but with the change that we saw with having the moratorium, we actually did not have as big of a jump or impact on some of those homes that were at lower values or the homeowners that were at lower value homes. That's just an offsetting. I do hope and really will look for ways for us both to reduce our rates going forward, depending on what we have out of the constitutional amendment or otherwise, but also for us to just try to remove the burden of the tax rate by looking at alternative revenue sources as well.
Well, it seems like residents, and this is not just true in Greensboro. I mean, we see it here in Winston-Salem. We see it in every community across America. Residents have desires. They have things that they want their councils and their government to work on. When I'm scrolling around Facebook, I see this consistent demand for more police in downtown. I know that we're in the summertime right now, so residents want all the parks to be open. They're asking for more entertainment options. So for that resident that has this wish list of all the things that they want, but yet they're a little agitated by the higher property tax rate, how do you begin to educate them to help them understand that all these various services come with an actual cost?
Well, you know, I think it's a communication that we need to have more than just one time a year. And we need to sort of build in that understanding of, as we are executing and we're bringing efforts online, these are items that are funded out of our budget. We had a COPS grant that we were able to match with bringing 15 additional more officers. And that comes from funds that we are able to have through our budget that's going to help with that cost. We have a BHEART program, which brings individuals out to help with those who are having mental health crisis. We're going to add the number of individuals who are supporting those programs. So our conversation with our community needs to be throughout the year of saying, these are items that the city is investing in with your tax dollars. We are looking to have a public value impact, and here's where that impact is playing out through the year. None of these efforts that we have to provide for are free, and we too have to be frugal. So the other side of our work as well is to need to look for cost savings and how we perform and how efficient the government's performing. What are the things that we no longer should do or maybe won't do in the future? And those things we need to communicate to the public as well. We should look for both sides of the house. It's not just driving revenue, but it's also being good stewards. And that's what residents need to hear and see from us throughout the year.
You know, Greensboro now finds itself with one of the higher municipal tax rates amongst North Carolina, you know, North Carolina's larger cities. Looking 10 years ahead, what has to happen for residents to feel that investment was truly worthwhile?
Well, I do think that 10 years ahead, we need to see some key efforts. We need to see workforce training that's occurred in communities that are underemployed and seeing more people having living wages and gainful employment that's really supporting their communities. We need to see some of the blight removed from communities. We need to see more commerce and activity happening in corridors that are currently left fallow. For the areas that do see a lot of activity, we need to improve what we're bringing there. How do we leverage places like the Coliseum, in which we invest millions and we attract hundreds of thousands of visitors every year? How do we increase that so that more people are coming and staying and playing? And then also with our university students, you know, the city mayor had a forum earlier last week in which they talked about 67,000 students that come to our city. 10 years from now, we really should see active programs that is getting those students to stay here and to choose to live and start their careers here, build families here, buy property here. So if we are doing what we need to do right now, the activity that we will see over the next 10 years will have sort of all pieces moving up, economic mobility happening, communities looking brighter and stronger, and us really leveraging the new workforce and labor activity that's coming into our community.
You know, I want to switch gears a little bit with you and talk about the economy. Every generation has one defining economic transition. Many decades ago, it was manufacturing. For my generation, it was the internet. And now for my daughter's generation, it's artificial intelligence. Data centers have become part of that conversation because communities see them as infrastructure for the next economy. When you think about Greensboro's future, how do you decide which opportunities position the city for the next 20 years instead of simply the next election cycle?
Well, you mixed a couple of things in there. I will say, in terms of where our future really lies, is the direction of our university's research and activity alongside the industry that's developing and growing in Greensboro. We have quite a bit of activity that's happening at the airport in particular around mobility and advancement in mobility. And that certainly also includes Toyota, even though it's not at the airport, in the various the other part of the industry that will come, the subs that will come to support the supply chain that will come to support those developments as well. We have companies like Lumentum that is actually designing and developing pieces of what then becomes how we transmit data, how we transmit AI data across the globe. So I really think of Greensboro and our region in this place of supporting this economic transformation that we're seeing. And it's certainly driven by technology. technology industry. You know, whether it's the mobility of the airlines, if it's the cars, if it's how we travel and in the speed with which we travel, all of that will be certainly enabled by the new technology and AI being a very key part of it. And we're seeing AI change industries across the board, including in transportation, but also in finance, et cetera. So I really think the future for the triad is how we build off of that knowledge strength that we're seeing in our campuses and the industry strength that is just growing organically, coming to leverage these other industry that we see here, and certainly being enabled by technology, AI in our case overall.
You know, Greensboro Economic Development announced that you all announced somewhere around 15,000 jobs. That was just in 2025 alone. And if we start looking at multiple years, I mean, we get into the tens of thousands in terms of jobs that have been announced or are under creation in Greensboro. You know, Denise, I was along for that ride. And I remember many, many years ago when Greensboro made the decision to start making larger investments into the airport, the Toyota mega site and all these things that at the time, quite frankly, I also recall many residents pushing back against these ideas and saying, no, we don't want that here. We don't want these types of companies here. We don't want that type of growth here. Now it feels like we're moving into a new cycle, and it's more centered around data centers. We just saw a large fight around data centers in Stokes County. We see larger fights happening all around the country around data centers. What's Greensboro's position in this city council specifically on data centers coming into the city?
Well, and I certainly cannot speak for all of council. Definitely want to make that disclaimer, but I will say a couple of things. The discussion around data centers, I think at the state level, and it's true for us as well, is resource management and the demand that it will have on resources as for us as a state is something that we really need to be mindful of and sort of planning for collectively. And from a local standpoint, there's been quite a bit of discussion and it continues to be. We've come together, some members of the council, along with staff, to look at what is our policies and what is it that we need to be protecting for. We want to ensure that our residents are, the quality of life is not undermined while we are dealing with the reality of data centers in some cases. I should say up top, though, that Greensboro is not those other markets, right? We are not going to see the mega AI data centers that some of the other fights have been about. We are more of a secondary market. So we're going to see data centers that are connected to supporting industry that's here. Our real balance is how do we ensure if we're making space, if they're going to be a part of our reality, that we do it in a way that protects our residents from a environmental impact standpoint. So that's looking at zoning, that's looking at setbacks, but it's also understanding the resource utilization. The last thing I'll say is that something that's unique for us, and I had an op-ed that talked about this a little bit, is the fact that we are really on the ground level of some of the research that's happening, some of the innovation that's occurring with companies like Lumentum. They will be able to read data in different ways where they won't have to use copper wires in the future that creates the heat and thereby demands the water. So we are going to see that evolution happen. We are learning quite a bit right now, and we hope to be able to bring our residents along with that so they can understand what is the real impact for us as a city as it relates to data centers and what are the things that we need to protect for. Last thing I'll say is I think on the other side of that is how do we also create space for entrepreneurs, our students, our future economy, so that our residents are actually able to participate, not just be a recipient or passive, being passively impacted, but this industry is happening right now, real time in front of us. How are we also preparing our community to be able to leverage it and take advantage of it, as well as to be able to measure it? You only can measure and plan for what you already know.
Yeah, I love that response because I think we are in this process, whether we want to be in this process or not. And I know some people don't like the idea of artificial intelligence. I've even started seeing people react online if they see you using something that was made by artificial intelligence. It seems to be we're going into these separate camps of, you know, one camp is okay with you using the technology and the other camp is like totally against it. But the process is underway. And I think what I garnered from your response, what I really appreciate, is that basically you're saying, let's figure out a way to do this safely and responsibly. And it's the same argument that I've made about housing and commercial real estate development for 20 years. Growth is going to occur. It's going to happen. And there may be the likelihood that something that you don't like may end up in your neighborhood. It may be in your backyard. But the question and the focus that we have to have is, are we doing it safely and responsibly? But just to say no, or I'm just totally against this, but you have no other idea, I just don't think we have the space for that in the economy that we're in. And I also agree with you. I think that the space is still evolving. I mean, you've got Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos researching ideas around how to place these data centers in space. You have Chinese companies that are looking at placing data centers underwater, the ocean. So I think we're just literally at the beginning of this process. And I think people are being a little bit quick and rushing to judgment. Public leadership has changed dramatically. City leaders no longer communicate primarily through newspapers and television. You're today, right now, you're on a podcast. I mean, today, policy debates unfold on Facebook pages, in private groups, on public profiles, and all across social media. Often before city leaders has an opportunity to even explain what's occurring. Has social media made governing more responsive, or has it made it more reactive?
That's a great question. And I think one for we should continue to explore, and one I wake up regularly thinking about in some form or fashion. I think that we have to ensure that as we are talking to the public, that we are truly reaching the broad spectrum of public. There is a part of our public that does consume and identify getting their information from social media platforms. So we have to be there. We can't say that they're not relevant, because at some level they are. I just had an election. You know, we are watching elections, and elections certainly rely on social media as much as any other platform to get out their information. But at the same time, we do know that there are many, many residents who look for long forms, newspaper still, as well as just direct communication. So I think the least the way I see it right now is that we have to take every platform seriously, but give it its context. No individuals are getting. We can't say that 100% if we focus only on social media that we're reaching everyone, and vice versa. Newspapers isn't the only platform today as well. So we have to deal with each one of those settings as if we are talking to true residents who are expressing true concern.
But, I think that's a great response. And I agree with you. I think you do have to take it serious. It's certainly just a part of our communities now, just like this podcast and all the other mediums of communication. But how do you separate legitimate public concerns from just emotional intensity? Some of these posts that I'm reading and observing, they seem to go off and become personal. There's some name calling that occurs. Oftentimes there are photos that are used, and the person in the photo is in a very unflattering position or whatever. How do you separate the difference between, okay, hey, this is a legitimate public concern that as mayor pro tem I should address, but then there's also this emotional intensity and outrage that also crops up on these social media platforms?
Yeah, well, from my seat as an elected official, in having been in government for as long as I've been here, there have been these platforms with individuals who may become more emotional and guarded in terms of how they deal with items that are of the day, and they are more intense about it. So I am always looking for what is the real message here, and then am I hearing those message concerns, questions in other platforms, and try to respond to that and set the emotion aside. I remember when I was city manager, we had different individuals who came up on a daily basis or regular basis and really expressed strong emotional discontent with me personally and other staff. And always, I always was looking for what is the real message and what's the real question? And let's deal with that. And what I will say to residents is I would just encourage them to not feed into the energy of personal attacks, but really ask themselves, what is it that matters to them, and make sure that they are getting the information that matters to them and that they're communicating for themselves and not letting others communicate for them. I think that's really important.
Well, you know, shifting gears again, you guys have a largely new council that's taken office in Greensboro. You know, every city council that I've observed, you know, they develop their personality over time. And this council has several new members who are still learning one another's instincts, their priorities, their governing style. How would you describe today's the council's personality today?
I would say that the council, well, in term, the council personality is one that is inquisitive, that is really committed to sustainable solutions. So really driving into what's going to make a difference, not just resonate for the moment, but make a sustainable impact. And then one that's collaborative. And with that, I think that sort of is the persona of what I have experienced over the first few months with this council. And it's becoming the sort of the foundational aspect of how we work together. Doesn't mean we don't disagree, but it does mean that as we disagree, that we can do it in a collaborative way, that we know that we're looking for a greater good, and that everyone sort of stays in and leans into the items as they come up.
You know, when I look at the new council that you all have, it seems like many of the new members were active in the community. I would describe them as community activists or community leaders. Mm-hmm. I know from experience that when you make that jump from community activist to actual elected official, that can be a tough transition. I mean, sometimes the way you think things operate from the outside, you get on the inside and you learn that things are totally different. So Talk about that process. How's this new council adjusting to just the reality of, okay, I'm no longer a community activist. I'm actually the elected official. I'm the one sitting in the seat. I'm the one that now has a vote.
Well, it certainly is different to govern than to be, you know, on the outside looking in, and to be an activist. I will say that I think our council really has made that transition with grace. In some of the messages you've heard from the council members from the dais, I think it's reflective of that. They talk about the fact of not being reactive, understanding and appreciating now that they're in these seats, some of the items that they continue to push for, but in terms of how they get there, how it gets done, taking the time to understand that and understand how to really, what the levers are and how to pull them, is something that they have been very diligent about. So I think they've done it with grace, and it is a really great example of, you know, you can maintain your activism, but do it in a way that's going to, again, be sustainable and impactful.
You know, when people look back on this chapter in Greensboro's history, what do you hope they'll say this council understood about the moment that others may have missed? And what do you hope they'll say about Denise Turner Ross' contribution to that story?
Wow, I love your questions. I like to want to sit and talk about each one of them separately for much longer.
I need that 2-hour Joe Rogan experience.
Yes, you do. We'll advocate that for you. So I think that what people will see differently is the holistic impact that this council will have. Our city will transform and change. We will do it in pace with the time and moment, as you pointed out, 15,000 jobs coming. we will see a collective movement of economic mobility and opportunity that goes from District 1 to District 5 and all of those in between. And in terms of the legacy I hope to have and the role I seek to play in that, is that ensuring that there is understanding from each side of our district what the other is trying to achieve. My reality is I think this is a city that is wanting the same thing across the board, which is a stronger household for everyone that's here and the ability to have a strong quality of life and maintain that, which is special for Greensboro. I know that from across each of the districts and across the city overall. And so my goal is to make sure that that's understood from every side and perspective and that every voice has an opportunity at the table as we have to make these difficult policy and advancement decisions.
Denise, here's my final question for you before I let you go, and it's going to be a hard one.
Okay.
What's one restaurant that you recommend in Greensboro?
Oof, that is a hard one. But I'm going to say, this is actually from personal, well, it's multiple levels, but it's really the Art of the Taco that we have downtown. And Christina Fuller, who runs it, and her mom, I've known them since my son was little, since he was a baby. And they used to make baby food for him. They had a high sort of a five-star restaurant out in by Adams Farm when he was growing up. And I've known them since then. And so the ability to see them sort of really transform as a presence in this community and take their love for food and bring it into the commerce and reality of our downtown has just been beautiful to see. And I love their food as well. So it's a place that I make sure everybody goes, as well as some others. So I have a lot of friends out there. That was a hard one, Algernon, but I'll go with my immediate reaction, which is that.
Well, hey, I had the former mayor of Lexington on here. I asked him the same question.
Ooh, yes,
and barbecue. Of course he couldn't answer with one because he was so afraid he was going to leave somebody out. So he filibustered and some kind of way figured out how to recommend about three or four. Make sure he checked all the boxes. That's what you have to do as a politician. But I love Crafted. It's located down on Elm Street in downtown Greensboro. Yeah. Chris Fuller is a great restaurant operator. I've had some chances to interact with her over the years, and she does a great job. So if you're looking for something that's really creative, some really great tacos, I suggest that if you're in Greensboro, go to Crafted. If you're not even in Greensboro, just make a plan to go visit downtown Greensboro and you can go to Crafted. So this has been another episode of Locked In with Algernon Cash. My thanks to Mayor Pro Tem Denise Turner Rawl for joining us today. It's always a pleasure to move beyond the headlines and spend time thinking about the larger forces shaping our region. If you value these conversations, then I invite you to support this work. Your donations help us continue bringing together leaders and thinkers who are willing to have honest discussions about politics, business, money, and the community issues most important to our state and country. Visit lockedin.cash to become a reoccurring supporter. Your contribution helps us continue producing independent conversations that elevate our region. You can also subscribe to my podcast on YouTube, Apple, and Spotify. Share this episode and send it to a friend. I'm Algernon Cash, and until next time, y'all stay locked in.
The executive producer of the Locked In podcast is Algernon Cash for WGC. The associate producer is Tim Beeman for Such and Such Media. This podcast is copyrighted and cannot be reproduced without express written consent of WGC.